This is the Venturing Angler Podcast. I'm Tim Harden. In this episode, we'll be talking with Will Flack about the Palometa Belize liveaboard fly fishing experience in Belize and fly fishing in Belize in general. Let's chat with Will.
To drink gin on this podcast?
I hope so. I'm drinking a kombucha.
I'm not going to respond to that.
I'm going to leave that part in.
Yeah.
I am. All right.
Good.
We're here with Will Flack of many things. He's been a guest on the Venturing Angler podcast in the past, talking about, I think, the Belize Permit Club. Will, do you remember?
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been.
I can't remember what happened 3 days ago.
I can't remember what happened this morning. In the years, I'm guessing it's been years since you've been on. Years since you've been working on some cool projects, and I've been wanting to have you on. But you wanted to wait a little bit, and I think now's the time. So before we get into what you're up to now. I think that was teased a little bit in the introduction. What's your background in Belize? A lot of people associate you with Belize, but you've been in Belize to some degree for a really long time. How did that all get going?
You know, it's pretty much my whole adult life. It went down on a fishing trip with a friend and an ex-girlfriend a long time ago, and fell in love with it. I knew right away. I think it was like day two. I was like, I'm gonna live here. And started slow, you know, a couple trips down, spending winters, selling flies, tying flies, learning the water. We've had the Trace Moscato's fly shop now for a long time. I think 2028 is our 20th year.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're almost there. And we've got two locations now, one in San Pedro, and we opened up the other one in Hopkins, kind of right after we started the Permit Club in 2016, which is our fishing lodge, our permit lodge in Southern Belize. And we've been doing that for the last 10, 11 years. And We've also incorporated our new permit fishing liveaboard, where we take four anglers a week, Mike and I in the skiffs, and we travel around Belize and, you know, chase permit everywhere, anywhere, however we can do it.
So I just looked, and I'm a little bit surprised. The last time you were on the podcast was 2018. That's 8 years ago, and
you don't like me? That's a long time.
I know. Maybe I shouldn't have said anything. 3 years ago, I was there. That's quite a long time too. So the origins for you there then were in Ambergris Key.
Yep. In the north. That's kind of, you know, San Pedro is always known as the hot spot. You know, it's back in the day, it had that really cool fishing village vibe. Now it's, a sprawling metropolis. It's like real touristy, a lot of bars, restaurants, hotels, resorts. But the fishing is still spectacular. You know, that whole Chetumal Bay area, that reef side, oceanside flats. Those guys out of San Pedro are fishing, 400 square miles? It's a lot of water to cover, you know, basically Belize City north all the way to the Mexican border. So it's a big chunk. had a lot of bonefish, permit, and tarpon floating around, swimming around.
I think I remember the first time I saw you. It was in like a press release about Tres Pescados being the first Sims dealer or something, and it was a photo of you holding a juvenile tarpon with a you had a buff or something on, and I was like, man, that guy
Are you sure it was a tarpon? That can't be right.
that
That that's fake news right
I
there.
know, touchy subject, but when I saw that, I'm like, man, that guy has got to be cool.
Don't you dare text me a picture of me holding the tarpon either.
Let's see what I can do. But anyway, I had the impression at that time that you were cool. And you know, they say never meet your heroes, but I'm glad.
Oh, calm down.
I did though get to. No, I didn't. I wouldn't. I mean, I would, but I did get to photograph you guiding a couple of people, or at least Jason, and saw you at work, and you are beyond dedicated, which seems hard. Like, so you, why, and you're a steelheader too, why would you pursue guiding for permit, as a professional endeavor?
I mean, I was a steelheader before, and I just like I like the challenge, you know. I say this to a lot of people though, you know, bonefish and tarpon readily eat artificial flies. And permit, not so much. And it's just like, you know, you think you got it figured out, then you don't. Then you think you do, then you don't. And you pretty much don't most of the time. But it's just like, I love the chase. I love it every day. You know, I think about it every day. I don't remember my dreams a lot, but I'm pretty sure I dream about it a lot. You know, it's just, I like the hunt and the challenges. I'm always up for a challenge. I like hard things. I don't know what kind of person that makes me, but difficult things intrigue me. And I think in the world of saltwater fly fishing, permits at the top of that. I'm pretty sure a bunch of people would agree with me too. But yeah, it's a passion. I'm focused on it, and I love doing it. I don't know, what's that quote? You'll never work a day in your life if you do something that you're passionate about. And I don't feel like it's work. I'm just going fishing with clients who usually become friends. And I like, you know, one of my favorite things about guiding for permit is growing with the anglers, you know, like especially if you fish someone repeatedly over several years, you know, you grow as a guide, they see that, you see them grow as an angler, and you have all these experiences together. And you know, that's one of the joys about my work is I get to see that every day. And you know, when I step off that skiff at the end of the day onto the dock or back onto the liveaboard, you know, I'm just happy. It's a good place to be.
There's so much I want to respond to there. Let's start with you saying, you know, and you did call it work, but like if you love what you do, you'll never work a day or whatever. And sorry, not to, I sounded a little bit dismissive of that quote, but I subscribe to it as well. But the thing that stood out about you saying that is you have anglers on the water, getting on the water when it's dark out. You are, I would say, you know, I'm always careful about using the word athlete when it comes to fly fishing, but as a guide, you are doing something physically demanding the way you work throughout the day. How does that drive sustain itself for so long, especially when you're trying to get an angler to do something that very well might be the most difficult thing to do in the sport?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, it's always key to stay positive. I mean, I don't consider myself an athlete, but like, I mean, if you've never pushed a fully loaded skiff into a 20 knot headwind, I mean, it's a workout. It really is. I mean, anybody who pushes a skiff for a living will tell you that's, it's a workout. I just, you know, staying positive, trying not to burn out, taking rest breaks, you know, between trips is key. You know, I've got, it's funny that you talk about this, but on my days off, I don't like to be in the sun. And, you know, so like, you know, if you're on a skiff for 4, 5, 6 weeks in a row, the last thing you want to do when you have 1 or 2 days off is go back out in the sun.
Right.
So I'm usually hiding inside.
That's funny.
But yeah, you just, you know, geez, man, I'm 48 now. So I've been doing this a long time and I'm not getting any younger, but I feel good, man. I'm, you know, I'm fit, healthy, you know, try to exercise, stretch, do a bunch of yoga, eat well, drink a lot of water, hydrate, you know, it's, and I don't know. I just, the word quit's not my vocabulary. Just go hard. You know, get up at 3:30 in the morning, run that skiff in the dark, first light shots all day, all day, all day till the tide's gone, go home, have a gin, regroup, do it all again. So, and happy to get up and do it again every morning. I mean, it's one thing I've seen in my 20, 30 years of guiding is, you know, I get to see the sunrise every day.
That's cool.
That's pretty sweet, dude. I mean, it's my favorite. It's the best part of the day. I mean, sunsets are great. Love them. But there's nothing like being in the dark and watching that first bit of light hit. I mean, that's, those are the Zen moments for me right there.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It's, I like that.
The other part of that I wanted to respond to, is you'd mentioned, you know, having guiding people who end up becoming friends and so forth. I could name a number of people that are long-term anglers that you've guided that I've never even met before. And so it seems like from what I witnessed with you guiding, there's definitely a relationship that happens between you and an angler. You have to be on the same page about everything from you know, skill ability, you know, abilities to what a certain distance or time on the clock is and all that.
Yeah.
Do you find, like, when I watched you and Jason Miller, I was watching like two people so in sync that you almost didn't need to say very much to each other and all, you know, and it'd be a word here and there, and all of a sudden you're both off the boat and on foot, and you know, you know how to work with each other. How does something like that develop? And, you know, what's that like as a guy to see an angler? I mean, maybe he was a devoted, you know, he might not be the best example. Perhaps he was the most devoted permit angler before you met him. But in general, how do you see that like guide to angler relationship form and develop?
I mean, it doesn't happen with everybody. I mean, different clients, different guys, different gals, they vibe different with different guides, right? So like some guys that fish with me just love to fish with me because, you know, the vibe's high and we understand each other, and whereas some guys that fish with Magic, right, they vibe with Magic and the reggae you know, and that's fine. And then there's guys or girls that vibe with both of us. But like Miller and I, you know, we've been friends for a good long time, and we're like brothers from another mother. Like, we have the same outlook on life. We have that same work ethic, you know. We appreciate the time that we fish together on the water and we don't take it for granted. And I think that means a lot. You know, and we are both just so focused on the task at hand. Like once that motor turns off and he gets on the bow and I'm on the platform, I mean, we are both in a zone. And there's one mission, and that mission is to put a hook in the face of a permit. And no matter what it takes, no matter how far we got to run, how many storm cells we got to dodge, how many early mornings, late nights, I mean, it's I love fishing with that guy, and I know he loves fishing with me. And you know, it's just, it's the vibe. Once you got that vibe, it's contagious, and you just, you know, it gets better and better and better. And then when it's over, like the week's over or wherever, you know, and it's just like you're just counting the days till the next time you can fish together again. And it's and that goes with permit or steelhead. I mean, Jason and I chased steelhead in BC, and you know, we've been down to Bolivia together and permit in Belize. So yeah, we're just, I think it all has to do with that vibe and that relationship. And as long as you're on the same, you know, it's not, I don't want to say path, but as long as you have that same outlook and you know, that vibe, I mean, you just, like I said, it's contagious. And once it's there, it's doesn't really go away.
Right.
And a lot of our clients are like that. And a lot of the guys that fish with just me, or a lot of guys that fish with just Mike, right? That's, you know, they get that vibe, and it just goes. And you know, you've seen a lot of our repeat clients. A lot of those guys have been fishing with us two or three times a year, every year for the last 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years since the permit club's been open, right? So, it's just, you know, once that's there, it's not going away.
Yeah.
By the way, Jason, if you're missing this, you need to come back permit fishing. I miss you.
Yeah. That was wild to watch. You guys in sync, and just how intense it was. That was pretty cool. Yeah. And then, like you said, Mike Anderson, Magic Mike, has such a different vibe. It's like, yeah, reggae, and yeah, the flats are calm and beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, Magic's more of the laid back Bob Marley, listen to reggae, whereas you know, a lot of people find me intense and just focused and driven. And Mike's in the boat listening to Three Little Birds,
right?
So
it's true. You mentioned these repeat trips, and like, you know, people who, mm-hmm. like Jason, who are just like, let's get out there. There's an effect that permit as a species has on some people. Mm-hmm. Why do you think, you know, I'd like to say that I've cast a permit, but if I catch a permit, then I'll be satisfied and can check that box. But maybe the other thing happens where then I like lose my mind. What do you see happening there? Like, people want, do you find that people are like, hey, I want to catch a permit for the first time, and then some sort of transformation happens?
I mean, not really. I think you either have this, I think you either have the sure? sickness, or you don't. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So you come with the sickness.
Well, no, I mean, there's people that'll catch the first permit and they get the sickness, and that's just, it takes over their life. And then there's other people who catch the first permit, and then they're like, let's go catch a tarpon. But yeah, I think for the real hardcore permit angler, I mean, we're all sick in the head. I mean, you know, like Miller just wants to permit fish, you know, Mike Ward just wants to permit fish, I just want to permit fish, you know, John Ulch wants to permit fish. You know, like it's a sickness. It really is. It gets in your skin, and it's, you know, it's all you want to do. I mean, you've seen me. I mean, I don't have a problem with bonefish and tarpon. I don't want to fish for permit. So, I mean, I would rather go pull all day, 12 to 14 hours, and get one shot at a permit then go catch 10 tarpon.
I wanted to go catch tarpon, but
that's mental.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. It's just like, you know, permit fishing's a numbers game. You got to show them that fly. And the more you show them that fly, the more you're going to get hookups. The more you're going to get hookups, the more you're going to land. That's the name of the game. So,
you know, for some reason, I only want to swing for steelhead. I'm not going to catch as many fish, but there's something about that process.
Yep.
And that enduring something kind of unnecessarily, you know?
Yeah. And that's why those are my fish. Like if I'm going for one freshwater species the rest of my life, I'm going to swing bugs and BC rivers.
Yeah.
And saltwater is going to be, I'm going to chase permit in Belize, which I get to do every day. So I'm really blessed, but I do got to tell you, you know, I miss steelheading.
Really?
Yeah, I do. There's something about, you know, end of September, beginning of October when the leaves are changing, standing in the middle of that river, looking at the snow on the mountains and breathing in that crisp air and, you know, swinging that tail out.
I love it.
It's great. When was I up there last? 24? 23 or 24, I think the last trip I did.
I just got a hearty bougle reel.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a fairly unnecessary purchase. But
sounds like you spent some ducats on that.
It was expensive, but like there's something about that loud click, and I like can't wait to hear that thing make a ton of noise. Right, exactly. And it might
I'll be yelling at you from across the river.
Yeah. Gregson calls, he has a name for Hardy Perfect Reels. He has Hardy Perfect Reels, but like he's got a nickname for like the sound it makes and then what happens, like the guy, it makes guys run away or something. I can't remember. All right, so you know, you've guided the fly shop out of San Pedro, and then out of Hopkins is the Belize Permit Club, which is, you know, for the permit diehard and junkie. And now you've got Palometa Belize. What's going on with this?
I mean, it's kind of the end game, man. It's, you know, sailing's been in my blood for a long time. Grew up on the West Coast of Canada. I just love boats and sailing. Love sailing. And it's been in my brain for 20 years that I wanted to do this in Belize. I just had to get there. It's kind of like the progression of going from, you know, fly shop to lodge to live aboard. It's kind of like the trifecta now. It's a great little program. You know, we take, 4 anglers a week, on the boat, and we just move around Belize, chasing the tide, chasing the sun, chasing the moon, chasing the permit. And, we're mobile. So, you know, we're on the water first, we're off the water last, we're moving constantly depending on fishing conditions. And we're booking select weeks every year, prime moon, prime tide. And, we're kind of booking that basically February through September right now, kind of hurricane season. We kind of stop and we kind of pick back up in the new year. But yeah, it's been good. I think we're on our seventh year now.
Is it really?
And let me see. Yeah, we're going into our seventh year.
Wow.
Yep. So, and it's been great. It's been actually unbelievable. Fishing a lot of new areas that, you know, aren't accessible, and just being away from everybody, all the pressure, And you know, Belize is such a great little country for the boat. You know, it's only 200 miles long. I can go from one end to the other in 24 hours. So,
So what's the boat situation like? Because that sometimes feels like a mystery to people.
we run, like I said, we run four anglers, so everybody has their own private cabin, private bathroom, full AC. We have our cook who does all the meals on board, snacks, and you know, the boat moves usually while we're fishing, so we're never really in the same spot twice unless the fishing's kind of exceptional. So we're moving around a lot. But yeah, so kind of a typical day on the boat would be, you know, get up at crack of dark, grab a cup of coffee, do some yoga, and breakfast, and then in the boat, sunrise, going fishing, lunch in the boat, back to the boat, usually when the tide's gone, or later in the day if the tide's still there, get back late afternoon, and then we're either staying if the fishing's good, if it's if we or we have an itinerary and we're going to move, then we'll move the boat in the afternoon. Usually anchor up before dark, maybe go for a spearfish, have
Cool.
dinner, couple cocktails, and then sleep if you like to sleep, and back up and repeat. So that's kind of a typical day. And we offer 7 nights, 6 days, or 8 nights, 7 days. We can actually do however long people want to go. We've got some real good friends that have become family now from Colorado that I think they're doing 10 days on the boat
Wow.
actually in a couple of weeks. So yeah, so that'll be fun. But yeah, that's kind of the program. I love it. You know, it's been a long time coming, and I'm happy to see it finally to fruition this last several years.
Would
And go ahead.
Sorry, I want to hear what you were going to say.
Yeah, it's been nice to just, you know, finally put all those pieces together and be able to offer this to our guests now. And it's been super popular. I mean, it's grown every year. I don't even I think we'll probably do 25 weeks this year,
That's
probably.
incredible.
Yeah. So it's been good, man. And you know, everybody, I gotta tell you, everybody that's come on that boat has come back. So you know, everyone gets their week, and you know, they're loving it. Dude, it's a badass program.
Well,
I mean,
it feels like, I mean, how far in advance of a trip, like, you know, if I were coming October 1st, when are you think, actually, are you open October? Yeah. If I were coming October 1st, when would you, like, when does a trip even start to get planned? I mean, I guess with you knowing the
I
tides,
mean,
but.
I mean, our schedule is always out a year in advance. Like,
Okay.
I just launched the dates for 2027. And what is it right now? It's the beginning of June. So, you know, we've already launched our dates, you know, 7, 8, 9 months in advance of next season.
Yeah.
And, you know, already more than half that season's already sold out, you know,
And those dates
with
you're looking
repeat
at.
guests.
All right. But when you're setting the dates, you're thinking about the moon and tides and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm booking prime moon, prime tides. I mean, I spend weeks looking at the moon, looking at the tides, you know, sunrise, sunset. I mean, I'm looking at all that stuff. I mean, it probably takes me a good 7 or 8 days to put dates down for the following year. By the time I look at all the variables that I can control. And yeah, it's an undertaking for sure. But like I just launched 2027 dates, and I've already started looking at 28.
Wow.
Just kind of marking moon phases on my calendar, just so I can briefly look and because we're actually getting to the point now where, like, I would, we're going to be sold out for 27 here in the next month or two, I think, the way it's going, and we're gonna have to start booking 28. So
Wild.
yeah, it's man, I'm just super excited about it. Mike's pumped. I mean, we love the boat program. And yeah, we're excited, man. I'm actually getting ready to build a new little panga skiff this fall for next season. So that's gonna be a sick little rig. It's yeah.
So,
I'm excited about that.
using like my, sorry to use my Bertin trip as an example again. So then, it's October 1st. You're looking at the weather a couple of weeks in advance, and then it's really like day to day based, where you're going to fish, where the liverboard's going to go. I mean, it's all based
I mean,
on.
it's all based on how the fishing's been the previous, 2, 3, 4 weeks before your trip. Where we've been seeing fish, is it spawning season? Are we going to have any negative low tides? What's the wind direction doing? Water temperature's different depending on where you are in the country, and I don't think that gets talked about enough. But I'm always looking for warmer water. So that's I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in my boat and you actually watch me when I first get in the boat and I take off, I always put my hand or my foot in the water.
Oh, I didn't
I'm
notice
checking
that.
the temperature. Yeah, I mean, if you're in a boat with me and I pull up to a flat, say I'm off the flat a little bit, you'll always see me stick my foot in because I'm checking the temperature.
That's wild.
Yeah. And just from years of being out there, I just know whether or not where the temperature is going to be, whether are the fish going to be there? Is the current the right way? Is it going to blow that warmer water out, or is colder water blowing on the flat? Is the wind direction, bringing that current from around the deep side, flushing that water onto the flat? It's going to be colder. Are they going to be more on the north tip, south tip? I mean, yeah, it's yeah, just the little things that you can control.
That's cool. And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the pangas. So the liverboard would have two pangas trailing off the back, and then that's.
Yeah, we tow the skiffs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no problem. It's we've towed them in 10, 12 foot seas. Those things are
Wow,
dynamite.
that's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've yeah, it's if you go on the boat trip, you'll come back. That's what happens.
And you might have like a completely different experience each time, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you usually do. It's we're trying to basically, depending on like a bunch of those factors I mentioned before, we're just trying to show you the best possible permit week we can with the platform that we have. And being mobile like that on the boat is just allows us to just access different areas and move quickly. And just, take advantage of all those things and make them work in our favor. So.
When you're doing these liveaboard trips and, really venturing out, are you ever surprised by things even after so many years in Belize that you experience when on these liveaboard trips?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the fishing's changing all the time, right? I mean, you might not see fish on one flat and you kind of give up on it, and you go back there a week later on a different boat trip and there's 300 of them there. And that's happened to me recently.
Wow.
And it's just like, why are they here now? Why aren't they here last time? And then that's why I don't sleep at night, because I'm thinking about what the hell's going on. So, you know, it's I'm still surprised every day, you know, these just when you think you got it figured out, man, they throw you a curveball or they show you something you've never seen before. And you know, it's I don't know, I mean, you've seen it on the World Wide Web and social media. I mean, this Sargasso dry fly eating. I mean, this grass is changing it right now. I mean, there's so much grass coming in this year, and just seeing permit sip on the surface. I mean, it's you know, they're hiding under mats. They're, you know, you pull a flat for 2 hours, you don't see anything. And you wait for the low tide, and they all just come from under the mat. I mean, it's insane.
That's
I mean,
wild.
why are you in that dirty water? But yeah, it's been interesting this last few seasons with all this grass, but it's learned a lot and you know adjusted our tactics, and we're putting fish in the boat, so that's always a good thing.
So you're not necessarily trying to avoid the sargassum, you're even pursuing it for that different type of.
I mean, it depends where you are,
Okay.
honestly, and it depends, you know, a lot, you know. I like grass off the deep edge. I don't like grass so much right on the flat where the water's stagnant and warm,
It
you
gets
know,
stinky and stuff.
like just choking out. Yeah. So there's a bunch of different variables, but yeah, it's been fun to see. It's been fun to watch these fishy dry flies.
That's really cool. You think it's harder?
I don't know. I just think, you know, it's I kind of think like you could almost be like permit on Sargasso is almost like tarpon eating palillo worms, I think. It's kind
Okay.
of, you know, it's just they just,
It's like a little
you know, that
event.
grass, yeah, all that grass comes in and it's just got all that food source on it, and they just, you know, they get crazy.
If someone's, I mean, you just talked about how far out trips are booking and how you're planning. But if someone's planning, if someone's booked and they're heading down there or they're slowly gearing up over the years because it's on their bucket list, what would you tell people to consider gearing up with as far as rods, you know, weights, that kind of thing? Do you need boots?
I mean, you can't go wrong. I mean, I always tell people 9 and 10 weights. I mean, if we're strictly permit fishing, you know, 9's my go-to, 10 if it's like cranking wind or you want to cast at a tarpon. But yeah, 9, 10 weights, floating lines, maybe clear tip, you know, standard leaders, tippet. Flies are changing all the time. I mean, there's a bunch of different fly assortments you can get. Yellow Dog's got some good ones. We got a bunch of, Mike and I both have custom flies in our boat tied by to, you know, we got Doug McKnight flies. I've got Mike Mitchell flies.
I photographed you guiding Doug McKnight.
Yeah.
I'm only saying that
Dougie.
so that I can, like, you know, so people can be like, wow, he's cool.
Yeah. I think Doug's supposed to send me a care package here. I just got actually some new bugs from Mike Mitchell that look amazing. Oh my God, I'm gonna crush it next week when I'm home. Yeah, so yeah, you know, I love Scott's. I mean, I've been Jim Barchi's been supporting me for a long time, and shout out to Scott. But yeah, 9, 10 weights. Floating lines, clear tips, standard 12, 16, 20-pound leaders, tippet. You know, the big thing with Belize is a lot of people come with big flies, which is not really what we use in Belize. I mean, size 6 and maybe size 4. Size 6 is your go-to. I mean, the crabs here are smaller. I will tell you that size 6 flies are probably, that's my go-to. I'm tying on a size 6. Most of the time, 90% of the time. Yeah, crabs, assortment of crabs. Don't sleep on the shrimp in deep water. What else can I think of? Yeah,
Sunglasses, of course, and
good sunglasses, dude.
yeah.
Good sunglasses. don't bring Bucky's polarized sunglasses. Get yourself a good pair of Costas, Maui, Oakley, whatever. But our go-tos are Costas. Green mirror. I like the new gold mirror lens is good. Silver mirror. Anything with an amber or a rose for shallow water flats fishing is kind of the go-to. So, okay. Yeah.
And what about,
that's it.
You know, do you guys get out of the boat and walk? And is there any
footwear
needed?
Yeah. Yeah, just standard wading footwear, zippet booties, you know, flat sneakers, Patagonia boots, whatever. Whatever people have or have stored in their garage, grab them, bring them. I will tell you this, though. Most of the fishing in Belize is done from a boat. I'm not saying that you can't get out and wade, but, you know, where we are in southern Belize, a lot of coral flats, not walking those too much. Fish a lot from the boat. I'd say probably 70-30 boat versus wading.
Will those coral flats tear up a foot pretty easily?
Yeah, tear up a foot. But also, it's a living organism. So I'd rather not be walking on urchins and walking on coral and busting down sea fans and doing that kind of like, what's that? Leave no footprint kind of deal.
Leave no trace.
So leave no trace. Yeah.
I'm certified, by the way.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
I did an online class.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. So now I know how to not be a jerk.
But yeah, standard saltwater kit, you know, wading boots, rain jacket, sunglasses, fishing shirt,
rain jacket,
standard. Yep.
I am glad you mentioned that. Yep. We got rained on when you were getting dug, and it might just happen briefly, but you know, you're soaked. Or if you're going through
immediately
tough water ever and you're getting sprayed.
Those 50-minute squalls in the tropics hammer you.
Yeah.
And then it's 120 degrees 5 minutes later. But yeah, waterproof boat bag, always good. Keep all your stuff dry.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Cool.
And if you forget something, we usually have it, you know. So... yeah, don't fret.
One question that I don't think I asked you 8 years ago, but I saw vividly and was sort of surprised, and maybe I should have known, but maybe what you'll describe is different. But what are differences? Because you can get so close to Mexico. What are some of the differences when it comes to the angler experience between fly fishing in Mexico and Belize?
I mean, if you're talking Mexico, like Ixcalac, Ascension Bay, Espiritu Santo, very similar to northern Belize, you know, Chetumal Bay, San Pedro, Key Cocker area, you know, a little bit deeper water, a lot of limestone, white sand bottom, you know, do have some reef stuff. But for the most part, like Ascension Bay, Espiritu Santo, it's just a big sandy bay. Kind of like Chet Bay in the backside of San Pedro, you know, you just got endless deeper water flats. You know, the southern Belize fishery is a lot different. You know, it's a lot of that, those submerged coral flats, you know, we're fishing the tides. Fish are only up there when the tide's up. Otherwise it's dry and they can't make it up there to feed. Right. So, you know, you'll have a flat that's 1 to 3 feet deep on the high tide. And then when that tide goes out, it drops off into 80 to 120 feet of water. Mm-hmm. So, it's very different than what you'd find up north in Belize or in Yucatan, Mexico. Just that kind of environment. But yeah, that Yucatan, Mexico and northern Belize is very similar. Especially that, like, Ixcalac, San Pedro. I mean, they're fishing. We're neighbors. They're 20 miles apart.
Right.
You know, and then, yeah, Espiritu Santo and Ascension Bay are, you know, little bit deeper water, sand flats. So
one of the things
I like the backside of San Pedro.
And maybe Northern Belize is less like this, but one of the things that really threw me off was visible mountains most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got the Mayan Mountains in central Belize. So like you'll be pulling a permit flat and there's, you know, 3,000-4,000 foot peaks, you know, 10-15 miles away.
Which from sea level can be pretty significant, you know.
Yeah, they look large.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty sweet, man.
They're well vegetated.
It's jungle pine forest. Yeah.
So that's one of the things that really caught me off guard was, you know, flying there from Montana. Actually, I went there from Florida, but, you know, getting there and seeing mountains,
it's cool. I mean, yeah, like the highest peak in Belize, Victoria Peak, is I think just under 4,000.
Wild.
And I can see it from the lodge.
That's pretty cool.
From the permit club. Yeah. You drive up the road to the permit club and you can see it right there. So it's pretty cool.
It's very cool. So yeah, it's, if you want to go to fish the flats, you might also be looking at beautiful, breathtaking mountain peaks from the water.
Yeah, if you want to go birding, just step outside the permit club and see 100 species right outside the door. That's a lot of birds.
Yeah. Gregson always takes bird photos when he's down there.
I got to get him back on the schedule. We don't have anything booked for 27. So I think he was just in Italy or something, or Slovenia. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing.
Both. Yeah, he was in both.
He's like the most interesting man in the world.
I think he's interesting. He doesn't really talk about himself though.
I don't always take pictures, but when I do, it's in a different place.
Yeah. No, I was in London and Paris, and he was in Italy and Slovenia, and I've been trying to hang out with him in Montana. He lives like 40 minutes away and can't seem to make that work, but
no,
we were together at the Belize Permit Club for a week.
he's always gone, man. He's always doing something.
Well, it's early June, so I think he's actually fishing.
He's got to be on the Henry's Fork, right?
He might get mad at us for saying that, but that's his happy place.
Yeah, the opener's coming up, right? When's the opener? Like second, third week of June?
I thought it already happened.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a big trout guy, but I mean, if he missed the opener, I'd be very surprised.
Let's see, the ranch. June 15th, every year.
Yep, I knew it. I knew it, mid-June. He's not going to miss that. He'll be there.
He'll be there.
If anybody wants to find Brian Gregson, he's going to be at the ranch June 15th.
You just made him mad, and now I get it. And he's going to be mad at me for not editing that out, but there you go, everybody.
No, that's where Brian, if you need to get in touch with Brian Gregson, that's where he's going to be.
Yeah.
The ranch.
We can't find him, but if you want to.
Yeah, we can't find him.
Well, awesome. Where can folks go to learn more about the variety of things that you have going on in the digital space?
Yeah, I mean, the best way to get in touch with us is look us up, BelizeFly.com. It links to all our socials. Email us, drop us a line on social. We'll try to get back to you as soon as we can. If you do reach out to us and it's been more than 48 hours, we're usually off the grid. Believe it or not, I'm still answering most of the emails. So, if you don't hear from me within 48 hours, just be patient because I'm probably chasing those pesky permit.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to have you on. Thanks for this conversation, and let's do this in another 8 years.
Let's do it sooner.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, man.
Hey, Tim, thanks for having me on, bud. Yeah.